Hey, George.
Hello.
You can hear me good. Thank you. It's
I
supposed
can
to get re
also see you.
good. And we are recording, so that's good. I will trim off this part. You'll be glad to know. Okay. Good to have the agenda up too. I get to host today. All right, I think I'm ready. 1 minute ahead. Let me check the agenda. Cool. Might as well get the agenda right up here.
Good afternoon.
Okay. Hey, Ian. Gaurav is there as well. I've got my demo guys here. Thank you.
Hi, Stephen. Good to be here.
I hope you mean the show us something and not the tear things apart demo.
I'm keeping my fingers crossed.
All right, we'll give it another minute. And we are recording, so we can get started. We can process this. Sam, can I get the recording so I can trim off the early bits?
Sure.
Looks like we have more people still arriving, so we'll keep waiting. I will put the agenda document in the chat so people can start filling in. I am hosting in place of Sam this week. Your loss. But I think we have a full agenda with a couple of cool things to show. All right, we will wait another nage and then we'll get going.
Declaration of time length accepted.
Sam, independent is spelled with three E's.
I'm an independent speller.
You are. I just checked though. EPFL, is that English Premier Football League?
That's pretty close, but it's the Swiss Federal University, the one on the French, the one on the French speaking side.
Got it. Okay, let's get started. So I will. We are recording already, but I will restart the recording about now. Welcome to the April 8th, 2020 Aries Working Group call, US afternoon. I'm Steve Curran. I'm hosting in place of Sam today. Agenda is up, so you can see it there. We've got a couple of demos that I'm excited to see, so we'll go through that. As a reminder, the Hyperledger Code of Conduct, as Sam says, be nice to one another. Please review it if you hadn't had a chance to look or look recently. Take a look at it. Remind yourself of that. Make sure we're following it. Likewise, antitrust policy is printed right there. We no longer read it, but I miss having a chance to read it, but I won't. I'll skip by that. Anyone new on the call that would like to introduce themselves? New or haven't been on for a while? Feel free. All right, no introductions. Announcements, only one listed here is IIW, April 28th to 30th. That is gonna happen in digital form, so make sure you do sign up for it. I'm sure Kalia and crew are gonna figure out how to do that. It looks like the tech they're using looks pretty cool, so be interesting to see how it goes. Meeting reviews, we did a few of these. Most of them are not there. Does anyone know, is the DID UX call active? I did follow this link and there's nothing new on it. Should we remove that? Okay, I probably will remove it for next week. Any contributors call happened this week?
There is a Rocket Chat channel for that UX group on chat.sovereign.org, so you could always ping them there.
Is chat.sovereign.org still active? I couldn't get to it for a while, so I thought it had been deleted.
No, I believe it's still up and running.
Okay. Any contributors call, I'm going to transition to host that on Mondays every second week, Monday mornings every second week. We largely covered just an update and figuring out what to do next. So we'll cover that below. That was the topic of the call. Identity Working Group is tomorrow. Steve McCowan, anything to say about that?
Yes, we're meeting tomorrow and we'll go over all the different things from the various working groups. Plus we have Riley Hughes of Street Cred is going to come and talk to us a little bit about the sovereign ecosystem transition and what's going on in that process. So we should get some good clarifying insights tomorrow morning.
Okay. Okay, I'll add that note. Okay, DIDCOM working group. We continued discussion of zero round trip versus out of band DID exchange connections. That was largely, and I think we'll go one more session with that, which won't be for 2 weeks, because I think Monday is Easter Monday in many parts of the world. I'm not sure the meeting's going to happen. Sam, any insight on that?
I think probably not. There will be some active stuff in the chat channels, though. So if you're curious about the topic, I'm trying to prepare some materials to guide the discussion. Okay. One's already been posted there and more coming.
Sorry about that. I should have been sharing. So I will share now. So you can see the updates I'm making and the stuff I'm passing through. See what happens when you get a rookie host. Okay. Upcoming releases and things. Anything going on with the protocol test suite? I don't see Daniel or Keith here. Any other changes to it?
There have been some recently merged updates. Those were pending for a long time and had some feedback. We hadn't gotten around to merging those. So those have been merged. There's about three of them.
Okay. I did add Aries agent test harness. BCGov talked about that at the Connectathon. Ian did some sort of proof of concept work, and we're evolving that into a full product. So we are continuing to work on that. And we think it is a good way. We brought in an independent consultant to do sort of an assessment of both the two, and the feedback we got was that the approach of the test harness, where the test harness is independent of two or more agents that are being tested, is a good way to go. So we are going to continue to evolve that. Right now, our immediate goal is to get a back channel for AriesFramework.net, since many of the integration use cases involve ACAPI and Framework.net. So that's the big thing we're working on. And then we've got a person who's building the BDD scripts based on the RFCs, behavior-driven development. So if anyone wants to know more about that, the repo's there and connect in. You can actually run the repo now with two ACAPI agents. We plan to continue to evolving that and put some resources into it. You never know these days, things change daily, I'm finding out. But glad to provide more information if anyone's interested. And anyone's interested in helping with a back channel for AriesFramework.net, please let me know. On the shared components front, Andrew's been working on, Andrew and Evernim, a number of contributions have come from Evernim, and we're now to the point where we're close to wrapping up a 1.0 release of IndieVDR. We have it running so that you can run, for instance, Vaughn Network without a wallet, without storage, just basically spin up a server that attaches, you know, grabs a Genesis file, attaches to a Indie network, and does all the read transactions without having to have a wallet or anything like that. So that's an example of it in use. And we've also, our Evernim team has been working on integrating that with libindy on a separate branch for release goal of April or May. On IndieCredX, not too much has gone on there, other than the fact that it is completely working. Like Andrew did do a branch of ACAPI where he did the credential exchanges using the IndieCredX branch or IndieCredX repo. So that is a repo which basically just wraps a Rust repo that basically just wraps URSA and makes it available in a format consumable by Aries agents that want to use Indie Credential Exchange. Also working on a new one. That's it. That plus means it's new. So Indie Shared repo, or Indie Shared for Rust, that has now transitioned to BCGov. So this, and I'll change this from Andrew Whitehead to BCGov. And it's basically the shared code that's between IndieVDR and IndieCredX. Currently has utilities for, let's get it right, ED25519 hash and wallet query language, WQL. So those things are in there. And I believe he's adding pack and unpack to that. And then those, and that will become a utility dependency for the other two libraries.
So quick question. Have you worked at all with Mike about if any of those pieces should move down into the URSA library?
Yeah.
It seems like ED25519 and hash would be something of great interest to that layer.
Yes, I believe that where possible, we're pulling those from URSA. And anything that's not there, we have a debate over should we either continue to put it here or move it down into URSA. So yes, we're absolutely talking to Mike on those. I don't think any updates on CredEx. The next step that Mike and Andrew are likely to focus on is moving ahead with the entire Aries storage layer, which is KMS, the locks piece, and where other storage like credentials will go and protocol state. So sort of a sort of handling all of that. And that's what is next for Mike and Andrew, we think. And obviously anyone else who's interested and has time to work on that. Any questions on the shared stuff? Okay. Again, I get to do this one again. Aries Cloud Agent Python revocation is pretty much completed. We've been doing lots of tests with other agents, StreetCred and eStatus, with getting some success. I think we finally had the first credential go through that had revocation supported that went through the wallets and back to an Akapai for verification. So I think that's the first time that's happened across multiple code bases, multiple implementations. We'll get those smoothed out in the next little while. We are wanting to have an indie VDR based tail server. That's not necessary for release, but we'd really like to have it. So that is some help wanted if anyone's interested in doing that. So it would be using the indie VDR code dependency, like library functionality, and then spinning up a tail server that anyone could use. Basically a public tail server that has only restriction that the only thing it will host, it basically is a file server, but it will host tails files and will tie those tails files to actual ledger transactions. We've also got tracing added, and we're going to have a demo of that later. Ian's going to do a demo of what he's been working on based on RFC 0034, which is tracing, and then some trace output visualization. And our goal in doing that is trying to instrument issuers particularly so we can get jurisdiction scale issuance. So a province, a state, a country able to issue credentials to all citizens, for example, and those types of use cases. And obviously that takes a fair amount of capability from an issue perspective. One other thing that was done in this release of Akapai is actually two more things I want to mention. I'm sorry I'm talking too much about this, but one is we've added support for handling of minor and major versions so that what we talked about on recent calls of being able to, for instance, support one minor version, but to receive a message from a later minor version and still be able to process and by ignoring the fields you don't recognize that were added in transitioning to the later version, the later minor version. So that is now fully supported, and we've got a good way to, we think, specify that to add protocols in relatively easy ways. And I think we're also adding a piece where we're going to link to, in the code base, a link to the actual specification that the implementation is based on. So that'll help developers know, what versions we're using and tied to. Last thing is Akapai is dropping support for V01 of credential exchange. So this was implemented at the Connectathon over a year ago. It was used by Akamai and Street Cred, I think, for a while, and then was deprecated in favor of the 0036 and 37 credential exchange. We're going to drop support for the old, what we call version 0.1. And so if any applications, any controllers are using that, be aware that that is going away. It has been labeled as deprecated for quite a while, so I hope that should not cause a problem, but be aware.
And just to clarify there, that affects the messaging protocol to talk about exchanging a credential and a proof. If you have a credential in your wallet, the data that's sitting at rest is not affected.
Absolutely, yeah. Okay, Troy. Aries, go. Or George. Oh, I saw George come off and then go back on mute. Nothing to say? I didn't.
This is Troy. Sorry, I just have background noise. I think there's a couple ongoing items. One of them is out of band work that George is doing, and also work on improving our verifiable credential implementation based on some interop testing that we're doing.
Excellent. We're really looking forward to it. We want to get to one of the things we want to do in Akamai is get to out of band. And did exchange so that we can get to the point that we're able to connect and exchange credentials with Aries Framework Go. So
yeah, that'd be awesome.
There's a decent chance we may be able to, we certainly have a help wanted sign out on those. We might even be able to bounty that to be able to increase the interoperability. So
cool.
Yeah, that's a big hope. And then, yep.
I was going to say, I should also mention we're finishing up the shell of present proof. So with that, we'll have the shell of issue credential and present proof done. And our next step will be actually bringing in verifiable credentials into those protocols.
Awesome. And we're going to be talking a bit about 2.0. And I pinged you guys yesterday for some feedback based on the work you're doing. So we'll talk about that in a bit.
Awesome.
Cool. Ruby, Jack, I don't know if you're on. Nope, don't see him here. I don't think I've heard a lot there. I don't see Thomas Law or anyone from Street Cred on, but framework.net continues. I did get a new version of the app in test flight the other day, so we're going to be testing that out with revocation. I don't think we've done that yet, but we hope to do that. Anyone who does want to play with revocation, we have a reasonable demo that's easily walked through, so you can try it out if you're interested. The remainder of these, any other feedback on these? We had Ajay on talking about Aries Framework JavaScript, and they are making progress on that. I think that now goes away and so that is moving forward. And I think, there is some regular meetings happening on those. All right. That's the updates. Okay. Intro and project updates done. Issue game. I get to talk again. I will keep this relatively short. I've just got a couple of things that I put together. Let me get to, can we close this? Okay, a couple of things we've got. Removing unused repos. I'm not sure the right people are on. So there was a whole bunch of repos that got created a few months ago. We deleted a pile of them. I am sharing my screen, right? You can see that?
Yep, we see it.
We're seeing all of your cat videos, Stephen.
Excellent. A dog video, actually, but sure. Aries, so these are the set of ones that we looked at that had not made much, had basically no activities got created, but nothing really happened. Rye did notice that two of them continue to have some things in them, including some forks of one and so on. So I think they are still, these ones are irrelevant and can be removed, and just wanted to check with the folks that touched those ones to see if there's any reason to keep the other ones, to keep these two, or can we just delete them? Sam, any feedback on, in particular, the Aries SDK Python?
I think that could probably be archived. Worked early on. This is the repo we're talking about, right?
Yeah.
So that one could be. I don't know that anyone's actively using it. There's not a lot in there.
Yeah, it hasn't been touched since like July, and there was like two commits done, and then nothing else. But there are a couple of forks. But I really don't think, you know, anything's happened to it.
It isn't. There's, we didn't predict this at the time, but there's been a more of a movement toward the framework layer than there is the SDK exactly. layer. I think that could be different in the future, but there's also not that much there. So my thought was, is if we just archive the thing, then
okay, we'll archive it. The other ones we deleted,
makes it go away.
But they had nothing. We'll archive these two. Is that the general consensus? I don't see anyone on the call that would represent Aries KMS, but I'm pretty sure it's a no-go. It's not going to have anything happen to it.
Archiving is fairly harmless. We can't unarchive it.
Yeah, it still shows up in things. So anyway, that's why I was, you know, just to, but archiving it is a signal that you shouldn't be using it. So I will get Rye to archive those and we'll close that issue. Okay. 421, service decorator needs a mandatory DID field. And Keith opened this. Unfortunately, he's not on the call today.
Yes, I am.
Oh, you are. Oh, sorry. I didn't see your name in the list. Awesome. So the basic note of this is that in order to populate the tilde thread decorator in the response, when there's no DID, you can't populate that field in the way that you are expected to do it in other ones. So basically the way threaded messages work, there's supposed to be there's a field called, I believe, received orders, and a DID goes in here and say that we received message one from the sender DID. But in this case, there is no DID in the service decorator. Should there be a DID added to the service decorator?
I was proposing that there should be, yes.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it doesn't make sense.
My thought is, because of how this gets used, generally it's not needed. It's used in ephemeral challenges. It may, with out of band, it service decorator kind of the use of it may wind up not happening. I don't know how much service decorator will be used in the future. So I'm hesitant to change it, and maybe we just add a clarification that if it's coming from a service, the thread should coming from a service decorator would just have the one, because there's an implied other party. I think adding a DID would be really, I don't even know how we would do that. So I don't think that's the right answer.
So are we stating that using a service decorator to begin a conversation that you will not have more than one reply, or because well, or you, there's no, I guess, and as well as no such thing as a in-party interaction, I guess, as well.
Yeah, I think both of those things would be the case. But that, I don't know. I think that's the case.
We certainly hadn't explored it. The intent, the original motivating factor there was, you know, allowing for the bootstrapping of a more established conversation. So I think there could be a case in the future, but there really hasn't been any discussion around those sorts of edges. So I think that making it clear that those are the boundaries we anticipated originally could help add some clarification immediately. And if someone comes along with a valid use case that needs those, then it can restart the conversation in the right place.
Okay, so help me understand. I mean, I thought the purpose of the service decorator initially was simply to allow a connectionless conversation of any kind to happen, whether that's NWISE or whatever. And otherwise, the conversation looks exactly the same. And then the state for that, those pairwise DIDs that are exchanged via the service decorator are, you know, they aren't saved. When the conversation ends, right, they disappear. That's, am I misunderstanding what the purpose of the service decorator was? And
yeah, I think the, what you are correct, except for the, that it can be used anywhere. And I think what Sam's saying is we did not anticipate it being used anywhere. That we didn't, you know, it was specifically used for essentially where there is a request and then a response message. So not an HTTP request response, but rather a DIDCOM, one message out to the one party and then a way to get a response back. I think that is the only anticipated use case as it is defined today. And what I think the answer to this might be is to add clarification to say, we expect this to be used for these purposes only as it is currently defined. And if you want to use it for more advanced use cases, which are the ones you're talking about, end party or multi-message protocols, more than two, you know, ping and pong type protocols, then it's likely additional capabilities would be needed.
Okay. I mean, I think the only, yeah, that's fine. It just seems like, so we have two choices, either leave it as it is and document it and say you can only use this for this restricted, or, and it says mandatory DID field, even if you said optional DID field, then in that case, then it could be used for more. But hey, anyway,
The history of it was that the connection protocol just included the endpoint information, not using the service decorator. Tobias had a use case for ephemeral challenges that eliminated a request response model, and then that began the process of recognizing that we had done the same thing twice, and the service decorator was born. That was prior to things like, you know, now we're talking about an out of band protocol that's different, right? And sort of, but the Venn diagram overlays a lot of these concerns. So right. My worry is that we could do a lot more, but it adds a lot of potential complexity to people trying to service requests. And in the absence of a direct use case that needs it, I think the general tendency is to avoid that.
So my use case is a verification flow, is a typical verification flow in which I let's say it's even on offline, a traffic cop scenario, yeah, in which I have no connection with them previously and I want to do a verification. And I don't want to keep, or I walk into a bar, you know, these are very, I of course, you know, you can build the long-lived connection into that and then explicit, you know, manually drop it. But this seems like just like it was made for it. So,
but that is what it's made for, is exactly that, but only that. That's what we're saying, is the service decorator comes in the request, the proof request, present proof / request. And then the response uses the service decorator to send a response back, tied by the ID of the first message as the thread ID of the second message.
Okay, but then that doesn't allow a verification flow in which someone says, Oh, I don't have this, but I want to present something else.
Correct. It does not allow negotiation in that. You are correct. Yeah.
It seems like that in itself, I don't know. I guess I'm missing why there's a big deal in allowing this.
Well, here's the deal. What I'm thinking as you're saying this, and again, I haven't spent a lot of thought on this, but there will be a protocol state object that exists, and it should have everything you need. So you don't really need a DID. I can see the end party. I don't think the end party constraint is a significant, nor should we try to address it.
Okay.
I think it's fine.
Yeah.
So okay. If we stick to two party, then I think the protocol state object, when you have a service decorator, should be enough to allow you to have multiple messages.
Okay. That's fair enough. So we just assume that the proposal is that we would assume that if there is no DID, if there's the empty string, I think is what I'm saying, or then it's the peer.
Yeah.
Okay. That's fine.
Is that fair enough?
That's fair enough. Cool. Yep.
Okay. Okay. I will grab that and do some updates to it and then fire it back at you, Keith.
Sounds good. Thanks.
Awesome. Okay, I'm going to stop there because we're out of time for this. Thank you. That was good. Good conversation. Okay, back to demo time. Gaurav, you ready to go?
Yep.
Excellent. I will stop sharing and you can take over.
Sounds good.
And this is Mediators, real-time mediator agent. Go for it. There we go. Thanks.
Can you guys see my screen?
Yep. Looks good.
All right. So thank you for having me. I'll just begin with a small agenda that I have for this demo. I'll begin by introducing what we are trying to do by having a real-time mediator agent in the first place. And then I'll just walk over a small demo that I prepared for this meeting. And I mean, at the end of the day, like, this is like a toy demo. So there are a few call outs that everyone should be aware of. And I'll hopefully have some time for questions as well, but we'll see how that goes. All right, so the introduction. We all know that edge agents or the agents that will be running on mobile devices won't be available 24/7, or they won't be connected to the internet all the time. And therefore they need a mediator to relay the messages. Looking at sample codes out there, I believe ADSframework.net does provide a sample mediator, but it requires the client to poll for messages again and again. And the question that I asked myself when I saw the sample code was, can we do better than that? Turns out there's another way. .NET comes with this library called SignalR, which allows real-time duplex communication. And it primarily uses WebSockets under the hood, but it falls back to other transports if WebSockets isn't available. Since we're dealing with mobile agents particularly, and both Android and iOS support WebSockets, so that's good for us. And the overall idea is to have a mediator that holds the message for the client in a queue if the client is not connected to the internet, and relay them as soon as the client comes online. Or if the client is already connected, we just relay the message right away. So having said that, we do need to maintain a mapping between SignalR's connection identifier and a particular client's DID. And if this isn't handled correctly, a malicious user can effectively perform a DOS by basically routing someone else's messages to itself. Obviously, like, they can't do anything with the messages because the messages are encrypted using someone else's public key, but it's still a denial of service. One workaround is to have like a small protocol when the client connects with the mediator, and that's when the mediator would send the client a nonce, which would be the connection identifier itself, and the client is expected to sign crypto and encrypt the nonce and send it back. And the nonce is kind of required because otherwise an adversary can basically do a replay attack. All right, so having said that, I think it's time for a demo. I hope I'm sharing my entire screen. So can you guys see my terminal as well?
Yes.
Yep, looks good.
Great. All right, so I've got a couple of screens there. This window has the Akapai repository in it. So I'm inside the demo folder. And just to get started, I'm gonna run the demo with I'm gonna run the Faber demo, or like I'm gonna act as the Faber agent in the demo. And on the other hand, I have, so that's, those are two windows in there. On the upper half, that's the mediator agent running. And on the lower half, I have another client that's written using Aries framework JavaScript, because why not? So I'm gonna go and open up. This particular instance of the agent. Right, so we're getting two options. So far, this particular agent that's running using Aries framework JavaScript has established a connection with the mediator behind the scenes, and it has done all the negotiations required. Let's go on to the other side. So that's the Akapai agent running, and we've got an invitation URL here. So I'm just gonna copy this one. And get it over here. Just to make sure that this has been there, I think, yeah. All right, so the connection went through. That probably means the mediator is able to route messages clearly, but to be more verbose, let's try something. So I'll just use the basic message protocol that we have. I'm gonna try and send messages back and forth. And let's see if we get it on the other side. Well, we do. So, right, so it works on both the ends, but now I'm gonna do something else. So I'm gonna disconnect. So when I press 2, behind the scenes, what I've done is I've closed the WebSocket connection. So this can be assumed as a simulation of what would happen when a client is disconnected from the internet. And now I'm gonna move back to my Akapai agent, and I'm gonna try and send a message. Well, we're disconnected, right? So quite clearly, we don't get the message yet. But what happens when we try to establish a connection again? And lo and behold, like the message is out there. So that's a small demo of the mediator working. But it doesn't stop there. I've something else as well. And this probably just goes on to demonstrate like how portable this would be. So I've got, wait a second, I can't find the window, so many windows. Right, there it is. So here's what I'm gonna do. I've made a small Android application using Aries framework JavaScript, and it's built on top of React Native. So it can be thought of as a mobile agent, and ultimately like all the calls are being routed through the Indie SDK anyway. So that's just gonna take some time to load up. Right, so now we're gonna go and provision the agent. Meanwhile, I'll just go back here and I'm going to start a new instance of the JavaScript CLI agent in this case. So I'm going to run this thing again. And let's just put it on full screen. And I'm going to reduce the size of the window, and you'll figure out exactly why I'm doing that in a way. Right. All right, so
very cool.
You've got a QR code out there, but now I need to scan it. So, all right, so this is where it gets a bit tricky, but I hope this thing works. Thanks. Nope. So let's go ahead and try to scan the invite, and there's a QR code. And voila, it works. So the mobile agent is actually connected to the CLI agent running on the right-hand side. Now I'm going to try the same thing over and over again. So let's go on and see what happens if I try to send a message from this particular agent. So say hello from Android. Look at that. I hope you guys can see that, but it says right there on the corner. Maybe I can zoom in now. Yep. Right, so on the top right-hand corner of this particular window, I have this toggle switch, and it's doing the same thing what the second option does on the CLI. So this button right here is gonna close the WebSocket connection. So I just clicked on that, and if I go ahead and try to send any message here, well, the messages are being held by the mediator right now, so I'm gonna send another one. And let's try to connect again. All right, so that's the kind of thing that I wanted to demonstrate. But as I said before, like the thing works, but then there are a few callouts that I'd like to make. At the moment, everything that I demonstrated, like everything that's being handled by the mediator is being handled in the memory. So there's no persistence as such. Well, that's actually partially true because the messages are indeed stored in the wallet, but then a lot of things are being handled in the memory, particularly the queues. And it's not production quality yet. So to begin with, like there are no tests, there's no CI/CD pipeline or anything like that. But having said that, contributions are more than welcome. So yeah, feel free to contribute, and I'll be more than happy to answer any questions that you guys might have.
I do have a question. Over the WebSocket, are you using DIDCOM messages to communicate over that, or is it some other protocol?
Yep, it's DIDCOM.
I noticed that there was an ID in the WebSocket URL. Is that ID meaningful to the individual who's connecting?
That's the connection ID that's used by SignalR, yeah.
So we have this working between the toolbox and the Aries Cloud Agent Python. But we're just connecting to a standard WebSocket endpoint as shared in the DID doc by ACAPI. And so it's a generic endpoint. And when you send a message across the socket, then it can know, and it can really be any message because of DIDCOM authenticated encryption. And then it knows which key to associate with the socket, and then can know which queued message to send across the same connection. So it sounds like it's super close to be able to work. And so if we unified methods, then everything would work with everything else without having to support two different methods.
I mean, I think it's quite similar to what I've done here, actually. So the connection ID that you saw in the terminal, I believe. Let's see if I can get that back. Maybe it's something like this. This is the one you're talking about?
Yeah, the only difference is that we didn't use a connection ID. We just connected to the WebSocket endpoint offered by the agent that's being the mediator, right?
I see.
But I think that's practically the only difference there.
Yeah, I just worked on a probably a higher level of abstraction, so I just dealt with whatever things I had.
Right. No, it's very cool though. One of the cool things that the reason we use that in the toolbox is because stuff can show up so much faster without having to pull for it when you're actually interacting with an agent.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
The interesting thing about doing this is that you don't have to have WebSockets all along the way to make it really fast. If you have two online cloud agents that are communicating, they can communicate via normal HTTP or any transport method they use as long as it's reasonably efficient. And as long as the two last miles are connected via the WebSocket to a mediator, then it appears to be very fast, even if there's not WebSockets the entire way. It's the last mile that matters the most.
I absolutely agree, because the messages that are being exchanged between two agents in this case, they can be through any transport mechanism. You're absolutely right there. Yeah.
Nice demo. I like it,
yeah,
by the way.
That was awesome.
Particularly interacting the mobile cool hack points for displaying a QR code in the terminal, by the way.
Absolutely.
That's the first time I've seen that done.
So a couple of things. Can you either in the chat at least, so that we can get it into the docs, where your repos are, where your presentation is, pointers to how to run the demo?
Right. So far, the code for the mediator agent is open sourced, but I'm not so sure about the code for the Android client in particular, because that was done as a part of some other work. So there's a lot of shared code in there. Yeah. But I think I can wrap that up, and hopefully I can open source that as well. So, but I'm not too certain about it at the moment. Having said that, the mediator agent can be accessed at, one sec. This link.
Okay, good. One of the things we've talked about is getting a repo called Aries Mediators and, having a subdirectory for each one. So if this is the start of that, maybe that's a way to do that. So that there are multiple mediators that are out there. So maybe have move yours one layer down in this, and then maybe that can become the start of Hyperledger Aries Mediator.
Yeah, sounds good.
Sam, others, what do you guys think of that? We talked a bit about this last week. I think that's an approach that sounds reasonable, right?
Yes, I do. Think that's good. There's a deeper discussion that I just realized we haven't had, and that's how does the agent tell the mediator which kind of keys need to be routed to it? And we've done some RFC work on that, but it's been a long time since we've had a discussion.
Yeah.
Right. So to add to that, I'm just using the messages that adsframework.net has out of the box. I believe Akapai has a different set of messages for that very purpose, but I'm not sure.
I don't think, you're talking RFC level messages, right?
Yep.
Agent to agent, because I don't think Akapai would have those. I don't think.
Please wrap for me in the key coordination. There is an RFC there, but I don't believe that code's been added to Akapai.
Yeah, I do remember seeing an RFC, but I'm not sure if it's a part of any other agents out there. But
and I think the .NET work was done pretty early, and so I don't think they all quite line up. They could though with I don't think a crazy amount of effort in the future.
Right, that's what I'm thinking. Is one of the things we talked about early on was that stuff's all proprietary, but then we started going, well, wait, let's not make it proprietary. Let's make a standard way to do it, and agents can vendors can choose to use it or not, but at least let's use standard messages for those that want to do open source ones. So
That particular helps in the case of just a full open source stack where you're using an open source agent like a mobile app from one project and a mediator agent from another project and helping them get along.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. Any other questions? That was an awesome demo. Thank you.
You're welcome, guys.
Nice work. Okay. Ian, you are up next. RFC 0034 tracing and what you've done in ACAPI for that.
Okay. Good afternoon, everyone. So I'm going to do a demo first just to show kind of what we've done with ACAPI, and then we can talk about the RFC. So what I've done isn't 100% RFC compliant. So I'll just kind of run through the demo of what I've done, what we're trying to do within the BC Gov, and then we can talk about the RFC. Some parts of it, I may propose changes. Some parts of it I just haven't implemented yet. So it just as summary, what I've done is I've added tracing to ACAPI. The target, we can either log to the log, just standard log, or to an HTTP endpoint. We can set it so that tracing is always on, or we can enable it for specific exchanges so that we can enable tracing for a specific credential exchange or specific proof exchange. It's added to the Alice Faber demo, and I've got some demos that I can do just in terms of what we can do with the data from Kibana. The specific use case that we have in BCGov is that we've got a holder, which is the org book, which is a public holder, which holds about 3 million credentials. And so we've had some performance issues just running this on OpenShift, just in terms of being able to load the credentials into our holder. For message tracing, we do have some interest in terms of looking at specific exchanges. And if we send a message and, you know, we're not getting a response back or we're getting a timeout, then we're interested in seeing what's happening to it. But the main thing we're interested in is performance. We've got everything deployed on OpenShift. We've got the agents. We have a holder agent and an issuer agent, as well as the holder process itself that are deployed across multiple pods. And so we've just had difficulties in terms of as we're loading millions of credentials through this environment, just to have getting a handle in terms of what's going on with each of the credential exchanges. And if it's running slowly, then trying to figure out exactly why it's running slowly. We do have some stats available in the agents, but they're more summary stats, so it doesn't necessarily give us the information that we need. So what we've done right now, we've got Elasticsearch and Kibana installed on OpenShift. So just as kind of a first cut, we're feeding the data through FluentD into Elasticsearch so that we can visualize it in Kibana. And we've also got some other analytics tools that we're evaluating. So how we actually evaluate the data may be a bit different, but Kibana right now, it just gives us some useful information in terms of looking at the data. So within the Alice Faber demo, so I've added some additional options to Alice Faber. So we can configure a target, which can either be an HTTP endpoint or it can be just standard log. And we can configure the demo so that we can say trace either HTTP or log, depending on where we want the trace events to go. If we leave that off, then it configures the agent, but it doesn't actually enable tracing. So I'll just start up Alice in Faber. And what that does is it configures the ACAPI agent through some additional parameters that are added. So minus trace turns tracing on so that it automatically traces everything. The trace target, trace tag, and trace label just configures exactly what is getting logged and how it's getting logged. So target can be an HTTP endpoint. Tag is just a tag for FluentD, for example. We need to tag the events that they're coming from ACAPI so that we can differentiate them from all of the other things that are getting logged on OpenShift. And then the label is just the name of the agent. And in our OpenShift environment, we're going to use the actual host name of each of the pods so that we can aggregate the data, or we can filter the data based on the pod that it's coming from, and we can get an idea of the activity of an agent versus the activity of each of the pods that are, we've got deployed for that agent. So trace turns it on. If I leave trace off, then we've configured tracing, but it's not actually turned on. So then we can enable it for each individual exchange. So within Alice Faber, I can establish the connection. And then once the connection's established, then I've got an extra option here called toggle tracing. So if I do issue a credential or request a proof, then it doesn't do any tracing because tracing is turned off. But if I turn it on and then issue a credential and issue a proof request, it doesn't display anything here because I've configured the endpoint that I want the tracing to be logged to, which is FluentD. So if I skip over now to my Kibana, then within Kibana, FluentD feeds the information into Elasticsearch, and then Kibana is the console that you use to visualize the data that's in Elasticsearch. So one of the ways that you can do that is through the feed. So you can, I don't know if you can see, there's a tiny green line at the end here that shows the data coming in. If I change the timeline, and you can see that this represents the credential and proof exchange that I just ran, and it shows the data that's coming down here. So I can see the Faber agent and the Alice agent. I can see that the agents are logging trace messages based on the credential exchange and proof exchange. So that's getting the data in. So that's one way to look at it, is just to look at the data volumes coming in. I can set up a graph to see what data is coming in, and I've set it up here so that I can look at the max elapsed time and the average elapsed time. So if I look back at the last 6 hours, which shows all the data that I ran this morning, then we can see just on average which events are running faster and which events are running slower. So that's the max time and the average time. I can also look at, once the data is in Elasticsearch, I can do queries on it. In this case, I'm looking for elapsed milliseconds greater than 2000. So anything that takes longer than 2 seconds. And it shows me some of the data that's getting hit. So elapsed milliseconds here is 2042. So this just shows just quickly some of the data that's actually coming in. So the source is the message that I'm sending from the agent. And that includes these fields. So we can go through these fields when we talk about the RFC. But in addition, the FluentD adds a timestamp. So it logs a timestamp when it actually receives the event, as well as the log name, which is the tag name that I gave when I configured the agent. So I configure a tag in the agent, and then that shows up as the log name when I get the data into Kibana. The handler is the name of the agent. And our intent is when we look at the data on OpenShift, then the handler will be the name of the pod. So we'll be able to look at the activity through each of the pods. I also have the message ID and the thread ID. The thread ID is the thread of the exchange. So that's what will allow me to collate together the messages that make up an exchange. So if I grab the thread ID, then I can do a query where I filter by thread ID, and then that will give me the different messages that are involved in that credential exchange. I can also pull the data out into a spreadsheet. So if I can create a work pad with a data table, and then I can tell it that I want to pull the data from my raw Elasticsearch documents from FluentD. And then that shows me a table of all the data that I'm pulling. I can do a query. So I can filter this by thread ID. And I can pick how I want to sort it. And say I want to sort by timestamp. And then I can choose which fields I want to display if I want to display a subset of the fields. So that's one way of pulling the data. And I've got some data that I've previously pulled into an Excel spreadsheet. So just take a look at, this is the data from one particular credential exchange. This is the time that it took. And then these are some of the elapsed milliseconds. so I can identify the specific specific events that took a long time. And also, one thing that's interesting is that in this case specifically, if I look at this column, which is the time between events, so it's the time from the previous event into this event, then I can see that there's 2.3 seconds elapsed time, but my processing time is only 1.2 seconds. So there's a delay of a second in between the time that the this thread was processed. So that's another interesting thing that we're going to look into, because it's something that we've noticed before, but we haven't really had the data to be able to drill down to figure out what's going on. So in this case, what would be interesting to see is what else this particular pod is doing during the time that it's not processing this thread. I think that's it in terms of the demo. In terms of the RFC then, excuse me. So there's the RFC specifies a decorator, a trace report, and then a bunch of behavior. So in terms of the decorator, if we look at the RFC, I've got an example of a decorator here. So the decorator contains a target and it contains a flag, whether to log the full thread or not. The way that I've implemented this so far in ACOPI is that because we can configure tracing to be globally on or off, if tracing is on, then it just ignores the decorator and it just logs however the agent is configured to log trace messages. If tracing is being enabled for a specific exchange, then full thread is really redundant because we want to log the trace for the full set of messages from the start of the exchange to the end. So for all of the different messages of either the credential exchange or the proof exchange. And right now we're just using the target that's configured in the agent as opposed to putting a target into the decorator itself. So that's something that personally I'm a little bit up in the air on as to whether that makes sense. But currently we're using what's configured in the agent, and then we're using the presence of the decorator rather than the content of the decorator to determine whether to do tracing on a per exchange or not. And so far we've got it per exchange as opposed to per message, because for us anyway, for our use case, that really to do tracing on a per exchange, we really want to know what's happened from the time that we initiate the credential exchange right to the time that the credential exchange is completed. So that's the decorator. And then the decorator is carried through on each of the messages of the exchange. So if we add the decorator to the initial credential offer, then it's automatically added to each subsequent message on the credential exchange. In terms of the trace report itself.
Ian?
Yep.
Could I ask a question? Just go back to that screen. So two things. One, tracing is per exchange, and I assume that would more generally be per protocol.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. Okay.
So the way that it's implemented, if you look at the I think Faber is either 8021.
Yeah.
8024 or 8021.
21.
Yeah. So if we're issuing a credential, say we're doing a send offer, then there's an extra parameter on here called trace, which you can set to true if you want tracing to be enabled on that exchange. Or you can set it to false or leave it off, and then it'll default to however you have tracing configured for the agent.
And that's the thing that's logically the equivalent of the trace decorator?
Yeah, and the difference is that the... Like this isn't a message, right? This is the JSON format, which is submitted to the ACOPI admin API. So then this, when the message is created, this gets converted to a decorator, which is then added to the message, which is then sent to the other agent. So if you're, for those of us who are interested, so there's...
Hold on, I got one more though, Ian.
Okay, sorry, go ahead.
Sorry. And then the other one is, I certainly see that if you put the target into the decorator, then all of the agents involved, including multi-vendor agents, can share the same logging mechanism, if it's a public logging mechanism. That's the only thing I see that target would definitely be useful for.
Yes, I agree. I agree. However, it also exposes a bit of a hole where if you've got your agent configured to log to whatever target the other agent sends to you, then you're potentially opening yourself up to leak information you don't want to leak, right? So,
absolutely.
So
I mean, it's
I mean, technically, it's not hard to do. I mean, you just take the target from the decorator rather than use the configured one. I've just right now for Akapai, it uses whatever the agent is configured for.
Yeah. Okay, that actually makes sense because if you want to, if you are configured to combine the data, you could just combine it after the run or whatever.
Yeah, you could combine it after the run, or if you wanted to do a test run, like for example, if one of our issuers wanted to do a test run, then either we could provide a port for them to listen to, or they could phone us up and say, hey, you know, we want to do some performance testing. Can you point your agent at this test run for, you know, this particular time period?
Yep. Got it. Okay. Thank you.
And just in terms of some of the guts of Akapai, so there's schemas for the input and output for the admin APIs. So that's got the trace added to it. There's the exchange record itself, which is persisted in the database, which also has the trace information added to it. And then there's the messages which are exchanged between the agents, which have the trace decorator. So there's different data structures for that support the admin API that we persist for the exchange record and that we exchange from within agents. So all of these different areas, these different points need to have the tracing information added to it. And then there's different objects within the protocol that have to be enabled to recognize tracing, as well as the inbound and the outbound managers, which actually handle the messages. So tracing, I think when I started working on this, it all sounded very simple. You just add a trace decorator, but actually implementing it within Akapai is quite a lot more complicated than that. So the trace report.
Hold on, Ian.
Sorry, go ahead.
Someone was trying to say something. I think it was Daniel.
It feels to me like the purpose of this RFC is being reinterpreted. I don't know that that's good or bad, but I think it's shifting in its meaning in this conversation. When I first wrote this RFC, there had been a conversation at Evernym about how to debug certain things. And the team at Evernym in its own software had said, well, let's turn on a bunch of tracing in our code and then we'll be able to see, you know, in our logs what's happening. And actually had built a system. They hadn't finished building it, but they'd started down a path that's pretty similar to the one Ian described. And I vetoed what the Evernym people were planning to do because I was concerned that it solved a different problem than the one I wanted. The problem I was concerned about is how do two parties who are interacting with different agent stacks generate a view of what's going on in a full interaction. If all you want to do is see what's happening in your own stack, you can just instrument it and we don't need interoperability for that. So I was telling the people at Evernym, stop assuming that every part of this interaction is Evernym software. How do you cooperate with an agent that isn't Evernym software and still get a realistic picture of what's happening? And now I feel like the problem is being turned into a general tracing of code problem. It seems like it's not just tracing which points handle a message in a routing interaction, but it's actually which components internal to an agent are touching a message and stuff like that. Am I understanding that right? Or am I jumping to conclusions?
Well, I don't think it's either or, right? I mean, for Akapai, we've got particular interest in, you know, what the touch points are as we handle a message within Akapai, right? And there's different stages it goes through. We receive an inbound message, it goes into a queue, we handle it. Maybe we respond by sending an outbound message. The outbound message gets received by the other agent. And so, you know, just the fact that, you know, we've received it and then we finish processing it isn't necessarily enough information. But at the same time, you know, it doesn't preclude us interoperating with other agents, right? So if we're testing with a mobile agent or with someone else's instance of an agent, then, you know, we're trying to follow the general format of the RFC in terms of, you know, how we specify that tracing is enabled and, you know, with the trace reports that we produce, right? So the intent isn't just to instrument Akapai and understand Akapai, but we do have particular problems that we're looking into that we need information for, right? And I don't think there's anything in the RFC that says, oh, you can't log the message at multiple points as you process it. In fact, I think it's the opposite, right? I think the RFC does say, oh, you might create multiple trace messages as you process a message.
Yeah, that's true.
So I think we're trying to follow the RFC, right? We haven't followed it exactly and we haven't implemented it completely, but we are trying to make sure that at the end of the day we're interoperable with other agents.
Okay. Keep going. I don't want to slow down your flow there.
Okay. So the other thing that I wanted to talk about was just the trace reports themselves. So there's two things of interest that we did here. Well, the first one, not very interesting. I've got an extra timestamp. I added a timestamp and a string version of the timestamp. The timestamp was this, I used the same format of timestamp that's being generated on other messages. So I was trying to be consistent, but then I also wanted something that I could visually read very easily. So I've got a timestamp, which is a number of seconds as well as a string version of that. Not very interesting. So one thing that I added was the thread ID, because primarily what we're trying to debug, and I think, you know, in general, when people are looking at message exchanges, what they're going to be looking at is the protocol as opposed to the individual messages. And the sequence of messages within a protocol is tied together with a thread ID. So I added that to the message trace. And that's really kind of the main thing that I've been using for filtering and sorting when I've been looking at the data that I've been generating. And the other thing that I did, or that I didn't do rather, was the RFC specified a way to tie together messages using the message ID, using a sequential suffix on the message ID. And I didn't do that for two reasons. So first of all, was kind of the intent of adding the thread ID. And the second reason was that it turned out to be actually fairly complicated to do that. This is not necessarily something I disagree with. It's something that it turned out to be, within Akapai anyway, fairly complicated to do. So I've kind of deferred that for now. May try and implement that later or maybe not. I found that the data that I need in terms of collating the messages I get from the thread ID, as well as just ordering by timestamp. And in addition to the timestamp on the message, there's also the timestamp that is collected by the FluentD itself. So FluentD grabs a timestamp in terms of when it actually receives the message. So if the timestamps are out between agents, or, you know, if for whatever reason the timestamps aren't accurate when you're comparing messages from different agents, then the FluentD itself adds a timestamp. So that can be used as ordering as well. And then the other thing was delegation. So this is just something that, because of the testing that I've been doing, I haven't had to deal with yet. So the, somewhere in here it talks about delegation. Yeah, so in terms of routing and mediating and so forth, this is where the full route would come in. And so what I've done in the trace decorator is that if there's a trace decorator on one message, it automatically gets carried through on the different messages of the exchange, or the protocol rather. So right now it's not using the full route, because when the trace decorator is on, it's just automatically continuing to trace on all subsequent messages. In terms of routing, Akamai supports routing, but I haven't tried to look at the tracing or including the tracing on the routed messages yet.
Yeah, can I make a couple comments?
Yep.
The full route is not in, I think maybe it's been misunderstood. I possibly described it poorly there, but it doesn't have anything to do with whether it's the full interaction. It has to do with whether it's the forward messages get the decorator as well.
Okay.
And this is gets to why the thread ID was not used. The forward, the mediators that are processing forward messages won't see the thread ID unless the parties that have done the wrapping include the thread ID in the forward messages. And because of that, using the thread ID didn't feel to me like a viable option. But if we were to tell parties that implemented tracing that they should put the internal thread ID on the forward messages, and thus they're kind of, you know, abandoning privacy, but we know that, then the thread ID would work. But that's why the thread ID wasn't in there before. It wasn't because it was just an omission.
Yeah, so what I found is that depending on where in Akamai I'm grabbing the trace, I don't have an example here, but the thread ID isn't always available. So in terms of logging events, not all of the events include the thread ID. If you enable, so right now within Akamai, with the implementation that I've done so far, if you enable tracing on a exchange by exchange basis, then it can only log at points where it actually recognizes, you know, that it's got access to that information within Akamai. But if it's enabled globally, then we can log trace events from anywhere. And so we log trace events even if we don't have access to the thread ID. We've got access to the message ID, but we don't necessarily have access to the thread ID. But it also does give us some information about what the particular agent is doing. So recognize that, like, we don't always have access to the thread ID, but we included it where we could, and then we're going to take a look at the data and see what value it gives us, you know, having the thread ID sometimes, not having it 100% of the time. But on the other hand, it does give us information about what the agent is doing, you know, potentially where, you know, we've got gaps in the processing and we're trying to understand what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
So that's it. Any other questions?
I would like to steal the last couple of moments of this. So thank you, Ian. That's awesome.
Before I do, Ian, that's awesome. And throwing it at Kibana is a really useful tool.
I agree.
Nice job.
Excellent. I did want to take 2 minutes at the end. I will not take long on this one, but I did want to show progress on the 2.0, because as I said, we're really interested in getting, you know, out-of-band DID exchange and 2.0 credential exchange going so that we can interact with Aries Framework Go. So we're very interested in doing that. So I want to talk really quickly about what I did in updating the issue credential 2.0. Whoops, it's on the wrong screen. Okay, people can see that. See my screen? Yep. Uh-oh. People hear me? Someone needs to answer.
Sorry, we can't.
Okay, good. Okay, goals. This is, didn't change anything here. These were the things we were trying to do. If this was all presented a couple of weeks ago, which I re-listened to, which was painful because I had to listen to myself. But I had forgotten all that we'd agreed to. So I had to go back over the notes to make sure I covered them all. Credential proposal, we changed it. We've got that in there. We talked about using JSON in attachments and the fact that the attachment RFC specifically says you can either use Base64 or JSON. And so we've got to get the frameworks to explicitly support both of those things so that issuers or people and agents involved in credential exchange protocols can use either, and the other side will recognize it. We talked about how to define the attachment handler, and I was convinced by the end of it that both solutions that I had thought about were lousy. And so we came up with a better one, which is this is the change that I've made throughout. So I've added to all of the messages a formats item, which is right above the attachments item. And it contains an attach ID, which matches the at ID of the attachment. And so the attach ID, the value of it should be the same. And then the format is some sort of format standardization based on what the attachment format and version is. So again, I've proposed that for Indy, it be HL Indy ZKP V1. And basically all of the attachments would use that format. We can add obviously future ones into that. As Nathan pointed out, this could be, this prefix, this namespace can be either, a standard like W3C JWTs, JOTs might be in here. It could be project-based like you're seeing here, or it could be even ledger-based if people wanted that, which is, the sovereign instance of an Indy ledger might have a slightly different format than the HL Indy ZKP format. And then I more formally called out that the RFC contains a registry of formally identified attachment types. So basically, where I define a protocol, and whoops, I do want to get rid of that. Where I define a protocol, right below it is registry of attachment types. And then the first one in there, because we've got them, is the HL Indy, the Hyperledger Indy version of that. And all of the details around that, including, what the data is in the attachment, how it is assembled, and then any other notes about it. And so in the case of the proposal, it's actually a fairly long section. In all the rest, it basically says, here is the type, it's HLNDZKPV1, and that is the same as what's returned by this function call in HLND, and a link over to the Indy repo that produces the attachment. So that's all of the changes that I've made in that pull request. So that pull request is in there. So the call outs I've made was to particularly Daniel and Nathan to make sure that I covered what they were interested in doing this. And secondly, Troy and George and the Aries framework Go to say, can you add the registry entries for the things you're going to be building or you have built so that those get documented. And as I say, others can start to build and use those ones as well. I didn't change a whole lot else. And so there's still a bunch of questions. And the other one that I did ask in that is how we, if we do want to do bulk issuing, the two use cases of bulk issuing, how would we go about doing that? And are we interested in doing that as part of the 2.0 exchange? If we, you know, should that be part of it? And if so, anyone have any ideas on how that should be done? Because right now I don't really have a thought of how that would be done. I think it, right now my guess is that should be external, you know, a wrapper around the protocol or something like that, but I don't really know. So there's a quick overview of that.
Can I give you some feedback?
Yeah.
I really like this and I'd like to see it merged quickly. I think that bulk issuance should be treated as a separate topic. I don't think it's something that we can just do as a minor afterthought. I think it requires some deep study because it has interesting trust dynamics and timing and distribution questions. We might be able to create something that's a minor variation of normal issuance for bulk issuance, but I'm not confident of that yet. So I vote to defer that and get the rest of this merged without making it wait on that. The only thing I would change is your red underlined item here is in the other style of identifier, but that's minor details.
How would you spell it?
I would just put an underscore since we're using.
Right.
But other than that, I don't really have anything. I just want to, I think it's great work and we should.
I will make that change. My plan was to also do, if we're close enough, so I'll let others weigh in, but I would do this for present as well, present proof as well, and basically make parallel changes to that. And it will also be handled at the same time, I think. That makes sense?
Yeah, they should be kept as similar as possible.
Yeah. Good catch on that one. I like it. Okay, respond on the PR, and I will look at, as they say, present proof, and we'll go from there. And that gives us 1 minute. Two things I wanted to call out before. There was a presentation done today on formal verification techniques for protocols. Sven Hammond did that today. That was on the morning call. Well worth listening to. It was a really good presentation. So we've had super high quality both this morning and this afternoon on those. So I recommend people take a look at that. Any topics for next week? What we want to talk about. You have negative 1 minute to tell me. Well, there you go. We'll figure it out. That's our meeting for today. Thanks all. Thanks for joining. And keep going on, continue this on Rocket Chat and in the PRs.
Thanks for running the meeting, Stephen. You keep us productive.
Thanks all.
Thanks all. See ya.